So you think McCabe's broken?
I do think he's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a very strong.
I don't know how anyone could complain about anything.
He's playing Von Stuck, who I think is like low-key one of the best masters in the game, like top 10 at least.
You know what? I don't like him that much.
Well, one thing you didn't do is you never summoned, which was like...
It was hard. Yeah, it was kind of hard to get off.
Yeah, I mean, you scored points instead of summoning, so you played it right. But I feel like it's so strong that Von Stuck can just like give Valedictorian fast, but push her like crazy, and she just walk charges like a five stone model.
I mean, I could have hopped over, and I could have fucking killed your like pathfinder.
Yeah, and then you get another undergrad. That's a 12-point swing. Even if she dies next activation, you got a 12-point swing out of her, which is like kind of insane.
Is it really a 12? It's a 2-point swing if she dies.
Oh yeah, if she dies, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm saying you get a 12. You get plus 2 points if she dies.
not with McCabe on the other side. Fucking yikes!
He's the worst thing about McCabe is,
I think he's worse than fucking Shenlong when I play against Shenlong.
Well, Shenlong is more nerfed now.
I played against it pre-nerfed, and it was not as bad as McCabe. McCabe is insane.
That's funny.
I think he's definitely the most like holy shit thing I've run into thus far.
What was just his melee attacks ignoring your shit and him having like 8 interactions every time he activates?
All the tests on his attacks. His attacks aren't impressive. It's what they do when you move, and I take a move duel and a defense duel. Like, that's kind of ridiculous. A target 13. That's why I took that
picture, because I was testing out this Von Schill list that basically is like a public enemies theory list, where I would just have a bunch of 6-stone or lower combat minions and then give Hannah and Stuck like shielded 4 every turn. And then I also have a source of healing, and then they also have armor 1. But McCabe was not a fair test, because I was taking that picture because he killed both of them in that one activation. They both only had 5 health left, but they still had the armor 1, and they were both shielded 2.
Yeah, he's nuts.
He's nutty. All right. Do you want to go ahead and talk about our topic?
Nah.
Yeah, all right. All right, see you later.
Yeah, let's. All right, let's go.
All right. So what I wanted to talk about today is something that I care a lot about. I think not in like, I have some stake in it, but I find myself thinking about this topic a lot, and I'm hoping that, so I obviously think that it's like something worth thinking about, but before we get into it, it's like complete mental masturbation. there's not going to be any practical advice in this topic. I think we may fall into something ass backwards, but,
I think there are a couple things.
Yeah. So what I want to talk about is how to play against better players. And I definitely want to introduce this topic because I think it is something that'll pop up more in the future as we go and talk about other different things. But the first thing we have to do, sort of define what I mean by better, because I don't know about you, but I think skill is definitely, especially when it comes to Malifaux and games where there's no sort of like innate biological thing that makes you much better at these games, that skill is a very sort of dispositional factor. It's not a trait factor. It's something that could vary from day to day. And when I say someone's better, I just mean that they're better on the day. Like, I cringe when people say, you know, like shit, like tournaments are about finding out who's better, or, you know, I'm the best player in my meta or something like that, because it's just like, okay, you're better on a tournament day, but if you slip for a fucking month, anybody can pass you, especially in this game where everybody's dog shit at Malifaux right now.
It's definitely like the winner's just who did the best that day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's
whoever played the best that day. I mean, if I guess like it's like in Magic, like the winners are the sometimes they're the people that just did very well that day. They played very well. They got very lucky, and then but some eventually, yeah, there are people that always place because they're I would say they're better than you know the average player.
Yeah, so. I mean, like I feel like having a nice relieving shit right before the tournament could be a better predictor than some sort of felt belief that you're a good Malifaux player in terms of predicting your tournament performance on the day. Like, I don't know. And that's come from, I've had a very, very good year where I haven't lost a fucking game all year, but I think that's, there are like a billion factors that predict that other than like quote unquote skill. And the reason I say that is because there are so many things that could change who's better on the day. And if you are a kind of player who can adapt to being in a weaker position, either on the board or in terms of your skill disparity, you can take wins off of better players. And I think that's something that I've almost like specialized in like my tabletop quote unquote career. Is like beating people that I had no business beating. Like definitely in War Machine and like Guild Ball to a lesser extent. I don't know. It's something I think about a lot. And I think about the road to that sort of success a lot. And I think it'll be fun to talk through which kinds of these cognitions are useful and which ones are just fucking waste of time. So... I don't know. What do you feel about that?
I don't know. There's a lot to it. I mean,
yeah.
I kind of think when you think about like how, like the answer to how to play against a better player is like it should be how you. I think there's only. I think the way to play, the way you should play against a better player is like the way you should just always play. I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You should never.
You should never play. Thinking like a game, thinking like, oh, I'm better than this person.
So yeah.
You should never think you are, you should never assume you're the better player.
But you should also never assume that you're the worst player
as well. Too. Like, you should never think, like, I'm playing against a player that's not as good as me.
These games are fun because it's about like improvement, right? Like, you play to win, but you play to get better at winning. Like, even the most casual player can admit that playing is about like self improvement and figuring out how to win, even if you're like, if you don't really give a shit, if you can have zero like ego investment in this game, and that's often what people call quote unquote competitiveness is like just ego investment. But you could still derive enjoyment from seeking the win. So yeah.
The objective of the game is to win.
Yeah. So what I mean by better could mean that it's someone who has more reps than you. It's someone who has more experience. Just in general, it's someone
the that guy could that just memorized every single knowledge. Card.
Yeah. It could just be that it's a guy who plays Reva and you've never seen Reva before, you know? So that person should have more table knowledge and should be the quote unquote better player in that certain situation. So I think that's my general sort of assertion and
it's
definition
not,
of what so, better is.
Yeah, it's not so much always who's just better like in every way or just it could just be who's favored in a matchup or something in some kind of in a way. Like if they're just favored, like if they just know this matchup, they've played it, you know, they have more experience, they have a better chance of knowing what to do, winning. Yeah.
And I mean, like, physical shit and, like, confidence and all that kind of stuff kind of comes into it. Like, if you're, like, the first time I qualified for Masters in War Machine, like, I was definitely nervous and stuff and played a little worse because I was playing extra safe. So in those kind of situations, I was the worst player, not from, like, some sort of biological condition that I was, you know, embedded with. But it was a situation where I was, you know, not as experienced in that situation. Or, you know, I've also been in, like, War Machine tournaments where it was round 6 and I hadn't eaten lunch all day. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm the worst player because I need to fucking pass out. just like falling asleep here at the table. So I guess if we let's say we've adequately defined better, and just to reiterate, it's not some sort of like, I don't know, if you think you're a good player, like you're a fucking loser. I'll just say that out. Like if you, that's funny, kind of harsh, but if you think you're like, I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Like people who think they're like good at this shit. I mean, if you think you got let me rephrase. If you think you have no room for improvement, you're a fucking loser.
That's better. Yeah. If you think so you can think you're good, but if you think like, there's a lot of players like that in Magic, like that you might have come across, where they think they've always done everything, you know, they've done everything right every single time, but they keep losing. So obviously they just, what they think is right is not correct.
Yeah. Woe is me, fucking bullshit. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Never lucky.
Let's say you're going to a tournament tomorrow and you find yourself in a situation where, oh no, I'm playing this person who is better than me. So maybe I'll answer my own question here. What would be like, what is a situation where you would find yourself in a position where, oh no, I'm going into a position where someone's better. I think a few examples would be also just sort of experience stuff. If you coming across a master you've never seen, if you're on the tail end of a win streak, you know, you could assume like if you didn't expect to do well at the tournament and you've won the first four games, you're facing another guy who's won his first four games in round five. You can assume that that person is also really fucking good and they're having a good fucking run.
So
I definitely have been in situations where one of my most proud War Machine tournament wins was when I had a very good, it was just a three round event, but my first, no, it was four round. It was just a four round event, but my first three games were very calculated and deliberate. And I was playing a new faction and I was very experienced with certain matchups and I knew exactly how to scapple out scenario victories. And then I go into round five against a very good player who was playing a list that was sort of off meta. It's like a list that used to be good, but for some reason people weren't playing it. And then I had, so accordingly, I never seen it with the new faction I was playing. I had maybe seen it like 2 years before that. I had no idea what to do in that sort of situation. So knowing that my opponent was basically better than me in this situation, I went for like a 20% assassination and eked out the win. So I basically scraped a win that I didn't deserve off of a better player because he had way more matchup knowledge. That was like I was playing his second faction. So if we played a full like fair game, there's no way I win that situation. But me assessing that I was the worst player in the situation and I needed to take whatever out I could take is basically what I mean by this topic. Like, how do you figure out that you're in a worse situation from the start? And what do these low odds outs look like? What do you think about that? Because I've been ranting for a while.
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways. Like if you're against someone and they're way more knowledgeable than you, or they have a or whatever. There's like some things in like games that I've tried to do to like kind of like mitigate their advantage, I guess. Like I think if the pool permits it, like pick a more like, I guess like a more linear like crew is something I like to do, instead of like don't pick something that gives you like too many options, I guess, to like think about.
It's a situation where you're not giving yourself like rope to choke yourself with, right?
Yeah, basically like if they know, you know, they have a lot of knowledge, try to take, like, I guess, take away what you having to think about what your stuff does, or, like, off, like, don't play, like, something very versatile, where you have a bunch of options, I guess.
Interesting.
Play something more where you kind of, it just has an engine, it just works this way, and if it's good for the pool, like, you should probably stick to that.
I
where you can kind of just focus on what they do more than how your own stuff works.
Yeah, I really like that idea. So I think another example of that is like when I usually write a crew before a tournament for a pool, it'll be like, okay, these two schemes are like the schemes this crew is really good at. And those are what I'm probably taking, but I'm going to go ahead and throw this minion in instead of this minion so that I can do this third scheme. And I'm going to also change this enforcer for this enforcer so that I can do 4 and 5. So I basically have all of my options open. So when I sit down on the table, I can take any two schemes that I want. But if you're going up against a player who is maybe going to explore, you know, where you, I guess, being able to constantly outthink and outmaneuver your opponent is not such a certainty. Limiting your options to just one win condition is not necessarily a bad thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Just saying this is what I'm gonna do, and then all I have to do is basically react on my opponent's what they do.
Yeah, like it's just like you don't have to play too reactive, or you don't have to make genius plays in the game. You already know what your win looks like, and now you just have to move towards your win, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's like when I play Jackdaw. That's why I like playing him a lot. It's very, you just kind of just get in there. I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what the board's going to look like if I win. Like, I know where every single model is going to be after I deploy, like at the end of the game. Like, I know where everything should be.
Yeah. And that's we were just like talking about claim jump. And the reason I hate claim jump is for the opposite reason of like this sort of play better idea. And that I hate claim jump because I'm never in a situation where I can guarantee that this is going to happen. You know, like there are too many iterative possibilities where I can not be within, you know, 3 inches of a model. That my opponent could basically just luck into being in the center of the board, especially if they're also trying to take it. But I like this idea of like a claim jump being a scheme that you take against like equally skilled or better players, because you know what the victory conditions is. The victory conditions is I'm going to kill your shit and I'm going to take the center. There's no delicateness about it. It's just a situation where this is what my win looks like. And if I don't get it, I lost. And if I get it, I win, you know?
Yeah. It's, I like claim jump. I mean, I take it every single time almost.
Yeah, I hate it. I think it's dog shit. But the whole packet's dog shit, so you might as well take one of the schemes that's all right. I mean, like, that's like dog shit. So I'm reminded of, like, I follow League of Legends esports, even though I don't even, like, play League anymore. I still watch the esports, the team I usually root for did really well this last season. But they said something that, like, really stuck with me in terms of, like, all of gaming, which was, they said, we're better not because we know, I'm going to butcher this. It's not like, this is not a quote. This is kind of just generally what they said. They said, we're better not because we, you know, only take the 60-40 fights. We only take the things that are in our advantage. We're better because we will take a 20-80 fight, but we are so good that we know exactly what the 20 looks like. Basically saying that, you know, even though the odds are not in our favor, we know exactly what the win conditions are that will get us the victory. So we're so good that we're willing to gamble on that 20% because we know exactly what it looks like and we think we can execute. And I think that sort of draws parallels to all of gaming and to like tabletop gaming and stuff. Mm-hmm. Another like strategy for playing against people who are good are as good as you or as experienced as you or better than you is like putting yourself in a situation where you can take low odds interactions and just hope to get lucky. I mean, this is very obvious in War Machine, right? Because you get your assassination, like, you know, you could take a 15% assassination. If you get it, you win. But I think parallels also exist in Malifaux. And one of the reasons I really like Parker Barrows in Outcast is because he is very good at limping into these sort of situations, taking a fight that he shouldn't win on the off chance that he might get lucky. So like basically his whole crew is min 2, but then moderate 4, severe 5. And they basically suffer no consequences for taking attack actions. So the whole strategy is just to flip enough cards till I hit moderate enough and flip enough cards until I hit the red Joker on damage.
Yeah.
So I think those kind of strategies are also something to look for when thinking about, like, how am I going to win this finals match against this crew I've never seen, you know? Are there ways you can mitigate that at list building? And I think the answer is yes. And Parker is a good example of that for me.
Another thing I think that I've kind of seen people do, and this is something that has where, you know, that I guess the better player could lose to someone that they don't think is better than them, is I think, and especially you shouldn't do this if you think you're, we should never do it, but if you think your opponent's better than you, don't make any plays like thinking that they will respond the wrong way.
Yeah.
I guess
that like, is don't, such a like, good thinking. Yeah, like, such a good point.
Yeah, like they won't know what I'm doing is like I should be doing this, but I think if I do this, I could like sneak in something extra. But like if my opponent's smart, they'll punish me for it. But if they're not, it's gonna put me ahead. Like don't assume your opponent won't make the right decision. I feel like every move you should make, you should assume your opponent's gonna respond the best way.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And I have an example of that in also an outcast, because I'm an outcast weirdo. Von Schill, the reason I dislike him is because I feel like he's a noob stomper for that exact reason. His whole thing is that he creates like these insane focused attacks with Hannah or with the strong arm suit Arik. He basically gives out some focus, gives out some conditions. He has high TNs though, and he's an upgrade master who's like a min 2. So you're kind of paying, you're sort of giving a lot of your more valuable resources from an opportunity cost sort of perspective to setting up these massive attacks where Hannah punches for severe 9, or these massive attacks where Arik one shots, you know, an armor 2 model. And all of this is because it requires stones and hurting yourself for damage, and then you drop 2 severes on it and you do 9 damage and all that's great. But that's all assuming that your opponent is dumb enough to not stone negative, because no one ever does that. Like no one remembers to stone negative on damage flips. And as soon as your opponent remembers to do that, you're like, oh, well shit, all I can do is kill enforcers. So like Von Schill, you know, because this whole thing is just these focused attacks and then having like 2 or 3 sources of healing so that you'll one shot something and then they can never hit you back. I feel like that's just a sort of a noob stomping strategy that if you come up against like equally skilled players, they're not going to make the mistakes that you need for those very valuable attacks to be worthwhile and something that you could transition into points.
Yeah, exactly. Or like even something as simple as like choosing like a trying to just like activation order. I've seen people do. They think like, oh, I can activate this, and then if they don't make the right play and, you know, attack the guy I should have activated, I can do this after.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like that never works out. Rely on your opponent to just not know what they're doing.
In the Jack Dahl example too, like setting up executes is also a little bit reliant on, not a little bit, it's kind of a lot of bit reliant on your opponent being worse than you. If your opponent knew to save their stones until you could stone for execute, then it's fine. Like it's easy to kind of get around that. So I guess that's an example of a strategy that's reliant on you not playing a better player, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, like when I play him, like execute to me is just, if I do it correctly, it should only just be discard a soul stone.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just discard a Soulstone until turn five. Maybe I can actually get one off.
Yeah, at that point, like kills don't really matter at that point. But you play Jackdaw just to be like a jerk. So doesn't even matter if he executes off. You just want to like ruin your opponent's day, right?
Yeah, just discard, just making them discard two cards. I don't wanna. Their card and a stone.
You attack my movement?
Man, I'm staggered.
Oh. This math is difficult. Oh, I move three. Yeah. Fuck Jackdaw. He sucks.
He's the best. I love him.
Yeah.
He's my favorite.
So I don't know what else I want to add. I just thought of something. Like dark horsing. That's like totally a strategy that's completely reliant on like you assuming that you're going to beat better players, right? Because you're taking something. So I guess if you're not familiar, dark horsing is just sort of like taking an underplayed strategy or underplayed master in this situation and making it sort of your bread and butter so that whenever you go into a situation, you're more experienced. So I guess that sort of contradicts what I was saying at the beginning, where I was just saying that if you have more matchup knowledge, you are the better player. But I don't know if you struggle in beating like someone who you consider a better player from a different definition, and that they beat you all the time in like tournaments or something, that dark horsing is a valid strategy for getting wins that way. Because if you're a rev a one trick or whatever, you're going to have way more matchup knowledge in every situation than a person who never plays against her.
I want to play Reva.
Yeah, she
got me dope. Thinking that. I want to play Reva Super Friends.
You want to transition into just let's just talk dojo shit? This topic's over, right? I mean, what else?
That's it. I don't know. What else do we have? Let's see. I was going to say something, then I kind of forgot. I guess it's just always, you should always play like you're playing against someone better. Like, you should never like try to do, I guess, like cute stuff when you're playing games, because then you're just going to, it's like bad habit forming, I guess.
Yeah. I think, you should definitely never play as if they're worse or that they're like that much better, you know what I mean? Because it's also bad habit for me, like especially in War Machine, because War Machine is I hate to be quoting it too much. War Machine is a game where like it's all of the result prediction comes down to matchup knowledge. So when you're first starting the game, it's impossible to get wins because you just don't have enough matchup knowledge to beat these people who've been playing for 6 years or 10 years or whatever. So in that situation, it's really hard to get wins, and you can develop bad habits because you don't know what your win conditions are because you've been just losing all the time, you know? So in some ways you can get in ruts where if you're losing too much, you're giving your opponents too much reverence, right? Too much respect. And you play poorly because of it. I wish I could in North Carolina, there was like this one War Machine player who I feel like I watched him win so many tournament games just off of people like thinking he was.
People were scared of him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so crazy how scared of him people would be. They would just, I mean, he was also like physically intimidating and like fucking swole as fuck. But, people would just be like, okay, I guess I'll do this. You know, so you can like, you can really get yourself in a situation where you lose games because you respect your opponents too much. But the opposite is also true, where you can lose games because you disrespect them.
Yeah, I guess I've never done that. I've never had an opponent where I was just like,
yeah, you're not bitch made.
I don't know, scared of them. I mean, I play against you all the time, and you're like, you're the best player. Forget better players.
As the stats reflect, I am
or something. You're not the best player. You're just the best player this year.
Yeah, yeah. COVID has like extended my reign. It's pretty funny. And now we're not even going to have a tournament. So like, I don't know. Is season one that's just going to be retired? And I'm going to be the default champion? I don't know. Probably not. It'll probably be a thing where maybe we go another whole year of rankings, in which case, as soon as tournaments start going off, I'm sure I'll get pushed down a lot. And I'm definitely due some like bad luck because I've had some lucky wins too. But yeah, luck is whatever, preparation and opportunity. So tell me about your super friends list.
My super friends list. Yeah, it's basically where let me open it up, make sure I didn't change it or anything. Yeah, I've been trying to just like think of like just some fun lists that are just very like low model count. Let's see, where's the good one? The Reva list. The Reva list is just Reva. I have her henchman in. I don't even know if he's necessary. He
seems so good. I feel like why not?
Maybe he's necessary. I don't. He might not even be necessary. So Vincent St. Clair, and he just brings some tech. He has some tech that he could just bring like to the table, I guess.
The kill summons thing is like, so
with
cool.
With his exorcism is pretty cool. His gun ignores friendly fire and corp, hard to wound. Like all that stuff is just kind of like so him, and then Anna Lovelace with the Carrion Emissary and Asura Rotten. So basically it's just summon a bunch of zombies and stuff and just try to summon zombies and let them do the interacting stuff. And then with everyone else, just...
You just play super elite.
Fling corpses at people, basically. Yeah, and just destroy things. I had another list. What was the other one? The other one was, I think, with Sheamus, wasn't it? Oh, yeah, with Sheamus taking... Reva as a second master with this one doesn't work as well because you don't have Anna, but you could have Anna. But as Carrion Emissary, Dead Rider,
what's Anna? What's
she
Anna
shoots the undead and makes them explode.
Okay,
and you draw a card or whatever. I think
that's cute,
just fun because you can make them with the Emissary. You can make them with the Emissary, you can get them pretty far up and then drop them. But then I took her out because it's like, well, Sheamus needs that now. Now that's Sheamus' zombie to shoot his gun again. So.
Oh, true.
I don't know. That's probably better.
I like the idea of Revo Super Friends because...
I think that one's better, yeah.
Because I don't see any reason... Like, Revo doesn't seem like she needs anything from her keyword that much. I mean...
She doesn't. She needs her totems. That's it.
Yeah. So
totems
why?
Are useful, super useful.
If the models are not that incredible in keyword, then why stay? I mean, it's not like you're breaking some sort of thematic barrier anyway. You're all just fucking undead shit, different flavors.
Yeah.
I guess you're wearing different clothes. Molly wears pirate clothes, and Jackdoll wears no clothes, and Karai wears kimonos, but you're all just undead bullshit. Man. It's not like an Outcast where I bring like, you know, Barbaros and a Von Shell crew or something. That's cool. I like that list. I think it'd be interesting. It would definitely be worth testing.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
A list that I want to test while we're talking dojo stuff is I've been reading all the Bayou cards a lot. I guess I'm going to resign myself to being a Bayou player for our area. If no one else plays it, just so that we'll have like experience against it.
Yeah.
And I have it all now, basically. I've just been picking it up through trades and getting rid of it at certain points and then getting more of it through other trades just because I like to trade off my War Machine stuff. And I really like Wong because I feel like he is not given enough attention because – just his – so schemes are really tricky in GG1, but he's the guy who can drop two scheme markers anywhere in his LOS. Anywhere in LOS. Like, that's a massive thing, especially in GG1 where it's so difficult to, like, score. I feel like scoring four in GG1 is going to be very unlikely from your schemes. So I feel like – That
I don't know. I've had a lot of luck with working my schemes. I like some of the new schemes a lot. Some of them I would never take, but then other ones I like.
Let me rephrase. In close games, I feel like scoring 4 is going to be almost never done. Because I feel like, I mean, obviously, if you get really ahead, it's kind of easy to score 4 or whatever.
Yeah.
But almost all, so many of them require you like to get activation advantage at the end of turn 5 to score your second point. And you can't do that twice. If you have, I mean, for both of your schemes, so whatever. Anyway, I feel like Wong is really cool just because he can do that. But his keyword is kind of like meh. The rest of it, it's just like he has a decent henchman, but then the rest of it is like whatever the fuck. So I've been dojoing lists with Wong as a second master with just the idea that I'm going to bring a solid master and then just have Wong score all my schemes without leaving fucking deployment. And the list I like the most is Zoraida with Wong and then 2 of the minions that they share because they have a shit ton of healing and then basically just flavor to taste. I like having the first mate because he's just a homing beacon for Zoraida to obey enemy models. So the whole point of the crew is just I don't leave my deployment zone. And it'll probably be played in like recover evidence or something like that. And I just use first mate as a stupid, very difficult to remove arc node so that I can obey enemy models and just push them back and make sure they never really cross the center line and they punch each other over and over and over while I drop scheme markers wherever the hell I want. And if you ever come into my bubble, I have 2 models that are fast and can heal and I can obey the shit out of you. It just seems like a really interesting list where you just play keep away the whole time and make them punch their own shit together, each other, like punch their own shit while Wong scores your schemes.
Yeah, that seems pretty good.
Seems like a very annoying list that I want to try when shit clears up.
You have a lot of shit I want to try. I've only ever played Jackdaw and I've never played that. I played Von Stuck in that Vassal game we played. But of all these...
Didn't you play Pace with Molly?
No, because I didn't get it all assembled. And then he didn't get what he wanted to play assembled. So we just played... I played Daw again.
More Jackdaw.
Against Shenlong or something.
I also want to mess with more Explorers because I have the entire... Well, yeah, there's only 2 keywords out. But I have every Explorer model painted now.
I don't like Explorers. I'm against it. I don't like new things.
Yeah. AWP would agree with you.
I hate new things.
Every time a card comes out, all the reactionaries get their blow their kneecaps off, knee jerking.
Yeah. Get out of here.
In reference to your McCabe beef, it's going to be interesting to see Second Master McCabe in all of this Explore Society grand.
I hate McCabe. I'm going to quit the game. I'll concede if someone declares Explorers. On me. I don't know. I think it was a lot of things that strengthened what he does.
Yeah.
I was a little afraid because I never played that list. I will also chalk it up to that.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I did not play nearly as aggressive as I normally do.
Yeah, and it's hard to play aggressive on Vassal because you fucking can't see anything.
Yeah, it's confusing. I think I could have played more aggressive and gotten around those stupid traps that you put out, those clockwork traps.
I mean, you still won, so.
Well, whatever. It was just that game was aggravating. Although I did a good job. I was just good at scoring. I scored so many points. I secured so many points so early, even though I was like losing all my models.
Yeah. Catch and release with undergrads is that's real nice.
Free.
Yeah.
And then climb jump. I love claim jump.
I think that's also going to be a GG1 secret is to figure out how to get your first point of the schemes very easily and then just figure out the second point as, you know, do it live kind of situation. So like catch and release on a minion that can easily score that first point but might have more difficulty scoring the second. It's probably just whatever. Who cares? Waste AP chasing this guy down if you want.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, especially later, like, that's a good thing about catch and release. Like if you have it on a model that can get away pretty easily or is pretty beefy or whatever. Like, to stop your second point, they probably have to give up one of their points anyways.
Yeah.
Unless they're already winning. But if it's a close game, like, it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to stop that point and score eight. There's, like, no way.
That's true.
They're going to score all their points if they have to try to kill your guy to stop you from getting that point.
That's a good point. Like, I've been more fixated on the fact that you can't get so many of these points without activation control turn five, and maybe that's you just be like, okay, that's fine. I'm still going to get one of them.
Yeah.
Or I'm still going to deny you one of them, you know.
Exactly, yeah. One way or another, like, they're not going to get the score, you know, to, like, not going to activate you to where they can score, like, they're not going to score 2 points in one activation.
Sure.
Probably. Like, the chances of that are pretty low.
Yeah, we were in a situation where that would have happened, though. If, like, because I had take prisoner on your catch and release target. So, like, whoever gets activation control, like, gets 2 points.
Yeah.
Which is a weird fucking situation to be in. All right, man. Do you want anyone to come into Discord and play video games with you? You know, advertised. Play fucking Hunt the Winter with me. What is your fucking game called?
Yeah, play Project Winter with me. Come visit my island on Animal Crossing.
Oh, I need your Switch code.
Oh yeah, I get it tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Reed is in a situation where she has to get more iron, and to do that, you have to hit your rocks that on your island. But she also read online that you should destroy your rocks so that you can get them closer to your house. So she destroyed all her rocks, but they only respawn one every day. So her village has just been frozen as she's waiting for her rocks to respawn.
She had to go use her Nook Miles to buy a ticket and then go to another island and then get the rocks over there. And get some iron.
She's been doing that, but like there'll be one rock on those islands. It's like a waste of Nook Miles. And she needs like
does she have a ladder yet? Like how far is she?
No, she doesn't have a ladder. She needs to build a shop, and she can't do that.
She's done that far. Okay.
I'm going to stop this shit.
This is the Animal Crossing podcast.
Hell yeah, brother.
Welcome. Yeah, exactly.
That'd be dope. The Animal Crossing podcast, and you just talk in Animalese, I believe is the name of the language. I'm going to stop this for real now.
What are you doing in my swamp?
Just as a postscript, we got a Discord channel up in the episode description. So if you feel like you need to log on and share some opinions about the apps, get on that and yell at us. We probably won't be super active on Facebook or anything like that. So hit us up in the Discord. Also, Jimmy and I will probably be playing games in there and stuff too. So if you're a PC gamer, come in there and play with us. I mean, like, him and I are good friends because we used to play 40K together, and then we, like, you know, played SWTOR and then like WoW and all kinds of Sea of Thieves, all that fun stuff together. So I don't know, if you want to game with us, get in on that. Just make your name like your first name. I don't want to call you like Ruroni Kenshin 6969 or something. Just like tell us what your first name is and like where you're from, and we can play some games and chat it up, or you could just talk and chat, whatever. It's dead right now, but hopefully it won't be. This is probably date this little postscript, but it's April and I'm playing the hell out of some Valorant. So if you want to play that, like, please hop in there. Warzone too. I'm playing some Warzone too. So come play or chat or whatever. Who cares? Bye.